Citizens within the city all became very anxious.
Purport.
The living entity resides within the body and struggles for existence with the limbs of the body, which are referred to here as citizens and friends. One can struggle alone with many soldiers for some time, but not for all time. The living entity within the body can struggle up to the limit of 100 years with good luck. But after that, it's not possible to prolong the struggle. Thus, the living entity submits and falls victim. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Rida Kala Aula Sava Sukha Bangala. When one becomes old, it becomes impossible to enjoy material happiness. Generally, people think that religion and piety come at the end of life. But at that time, one generally becomes meditative and takes some so-called yoga process to relax in the name of meditation. Meditation, however, is simply a farce for those who have enjoyed life in sense gratification. As described in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, meditation, dhyana, dharana, is a difficult subject matter that one has to learn from his very youth. To meditate, one must restrain himself from all kinds of sense gratification. Unfortunately, meditation has now become a fashion for those who are overly addicted to sensual things. Such meditation is defeated by the struggle for existence. Sometimes such meditative processes pass through transcendental meditation. King Paranjana, the living entity, being thus victimized by the hard struggle for existence, took to transcendental meditation with his friends and relatives. Text again. Shiyamanis swasambande ekasmin bahubhir yuga chindambaram jagamartha sarastra purabandhava. Because he had to fight alone with so many soldiers, all of whom were great warriors. The serpent with five hoods became very weak. Seeing that his most intimate friend was weakening, King Paranjana and his friends and citizens within the city all became very anxious. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya Srimadhe Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dhaname Namaste, Sarasuda Deve, Gauravani Tijarne, Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Paschetya, Tijarne. What is the verse of Bhagavad Gita? This is about it. Sarvakarmani manasa sanyasyaste sukhamusi neither dwelleth parade he neither kuravanda karya. When the body soul is happily in the city, when the body soul renounces the results of activities, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, neither working nor causing work to be done. So that's the situation of us who are living in a city of nine gates. What are the gates? Does anyone know what the gates are? What's the gates of our city? What's that?
The senses and the mouth, the voice, the ear,
eyes. Two eyes, that's two.
Two
ears. Nose is five. Mouth is six. What's that? Yeah, seven. Genitals, eight. What's the nine gates? We had two eyes, two ears,
two nostrils.
Two nostrils. Anyhow, two eyes, two ears, nostril, genital, rectum, mouth. I guess I'm going to say two nostrils. So these are the nine gates. And everyone is struggling to maintain these nine gates. And these nine gates are flowing the objects of our sense gratification, something to look at, something to smell, something to hear, something to taste, etc. And if we can satisfy the senses, then we feel temporarily happy, but there's always some disturbance. If we eat too much, then there's disturbance. We smell the wrong thing, there's disturbance. We see the wrong thing, there's a disturbance. So we're constantly trying to gratify our senses, and they're constantly disturbing us. But when the embodied soul renounces the results of his work, that neither working or causing work to be done, then he lives happily in the city of the nine gates. Now, there's a time when the nine gates, the city, gets disturbed. This is King Puranjan, is a figure of the story about someone living in a kingdom and having problems, like being attacked by the different Chandravega, his army and his soldiers. So we're constantly being attacked by the modes of material nature, the different circumstances we find ourselves under, the Adi Devaka, Adi Bodhika, and Adi Atmaka miseries. If there's not a forest fire, then we have a stomachache. And if there's no stomachache, then someone calls us and criticizes us, and our mind becomes disturbed. Or there's something in our bed and it bites us. Or flying by hits us in the face. So there's always some kind of disturbance. And as one gets older, one cannot expect to figure out how to solve all the disturbances. Now I've been living in the body for 90 years, I should know how to put an end to all the disturbances. No, even after so much experience, the disturbances simply increase. And if one gets to 100 years old, one cannot expect to be expert at solving all the problems of material existence. One should become expert to know that there's nothing but problems in material existence. Now, we have our senses, our mind, our intelligence, and the false ego. So generally speaking, when the body falls apart, then one wants to get out of the body, and because we can't get out of the body, we take a ride in the mind somewhere. We try to take shelter in the mind, just like, for instance, if you have a toothache. And it's quite disturbing. And everything you do to try to solve the toothache simply makes you more disturbed. And even you go to the dentist, and the dentist drills down your tooth, and that's even more disturbing than even the toothache. And at the end, he made a mistake, and you're more in pain than when you started. And then you watch your favorite football game, Aussie rules or something, and you forget all about it, because you're distracted. You thought that this was the most important thing in the world, your toothache, but now you found something better. A football game or a cricket match. And then you forget about it. And as soon as the match is over, and especially if your team lost, then your toothache has increased many fold. So this is called trying to get out of the gross bodily conception of life by coming to the material mental conception of life, the mental body. As you see sometimes people walking down the street, they seem to be completely on the mental platform. They're completely unaware of what's going on until they cross the street and some car hits them, and then they get some idea that there's something else going on. Or they bump into someone a little less drastic. So Krishna says, Udarada Atmanatmana, Atmanam Avasadaya, Admaivi Atmano Bhagavar, Admaivi Riparatmanaha. And a man must elevate himself by his own mind and degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So the living entity is entangled, the soul is entangled, because of the mind's taking shelter of the false ego. In other words, as probably explained in one purport, that everything begins with hearing the glories of sense gratification. And when the soul is convinced that there's some possibility of finding happiness by contacting the senses with their objects and experiencing that happiness within the mind, then the soul utilizes the material intelligence to acquire a false ego by which it identifies itself with the mind and senses and therefore tries to enjoy that particular kind of sense gratification. Unless there was a false ego, then we wouldn't identify ourselves with the mind and senses, and we wouldn't think of ourselves happy when the mind and senses are not disturbed or satisfied or gratified. Because if we didn't have a false ego, then we wouldn't be disturbed either by the material circumstances. So if we're going to accept the happiness of material sense gratification, we're going to have to also accept the misery of material gratification or material existence. In other words, if we want our mind to be identified with the false ego and experience the gross and subtle senses, then we're going to have to accept both the so-called happiness and also the miseries of material existence. But if we add up the happiness compared to the misery, we'll find out there's quite an imbalance. There's quite a bit more misery than there is happiness. Just like our finger, how much happiness does anyone feel from their finger right now? You feeling ecstasy coming out of your finger? Now, if I took a hammer and I smashed everyone's finger here, how much misery are you going to feel from your finger? So the finger can't give very much happiness, but it can give a whole lot of misery under certain circumstances. So, we can also take the mind and put it on something else other than our false ego. In other words, it's through the mind's identification or taking shelter of the false ego that we go through material existence. But our mind can also take shelter of Krishna consciousness. Now for the materialist who doesn't know about Krishna consciousness, when they try to put their mind somewhere else, it's usually on something which is insignificant. It's like Vaishasika, the book distributor, who sometimes talked when they stop people in the street, he said, "You look spiritual, I can see in your eyes that you're spiritual." And the person usually says, "Yes, of course I'm spiritual." "What kind of spiritual practice do you do?" And then they say, "I play tennis." "Oh, I knew it." "I knew you were spiritual." So people will take their mind off of one subject matter and they'll put it onto something else and they think that's spiritual. Or if they can just shut out their anxiety for a moment, they think they're in heaven. But this is all due to maintaining the false ego. In other words, as long as one is on the false ego platform, the false ego will only offer alternatives in the modes of ignorance, passion, or goodness in order to meditate upon, to think about. Because that's the experience of material existence. And if there's no higher knowledge, then that's all we have left. But by the process of hearing, and we say, Namas Chintamani Krishnas, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Porno Shudo Nitibukto Piradat Namanamya. That Krishna and his name and everything else about Krishna are non-different from Krishna. In other words, when we hear Krishna's name, then we're actually associated with Krishna, to some degree. Depends how far away our consciousness is from Krishna. We have some awareness of our association with Krishna. Krishna may be there when we can't learn his name, but because our consciousness is covered, therefore we're not aware of Krishna's presence to the greatest degree possible. It's like the yogi was sitting, there was a yogi, and some rich man made a bet with him that, I bet you can sit in ice water the whole night. So the yogi said, yes, I can. So all night long, the yogi sat in the ice water, meditating on Krishna, of course. And in the morning, the rich man came and said, I'm not going to give you any money because you cheated. So the yogi said, how did I cheat? He said, you see that candle 2 kilometers away? You were taking heat from the candle. So the yogi said, that's not possible. He said, I know that you did it, and therefore I'm not giving you any money. So the rich man had his servant, and he heard this, and he realized that his master was cheating the yogi. The next day, the master had to go to a city for important business, and he asked his servant to cook and have it ready at a certain time. So the time came, and the master said, is the food ready? And he said, no, it's still cooking. So the rich man said, all right, I'll wait a little while. So some time passed, and he asked the servant, is the food ready yet? He said, no, it's still cooking. So then the rich man went into the kitchen to find out why it was taking so long. And he saw that the fire was there, and the pot was there, and the food was in the pot, but it was on a stand. And so the food was a good distance, the pot and the food was a good distance from the fire, and therefore it was cooking very, very slowly. So the rich man said, what are you doing? Why didn't you put the pot on the fire? He said, I learned from you yesterday, it makes no difference. The yogi, he was taking help from a candle kilometers away, so I'm sure the pot will actually cook the food, even though it's somewhat far away from the fire. So the man realized he had cheated the yogi, and he gave him the money to get. Similarly, Krishna may be there, but if he's far away from our consciousness, then we won't experience very much of Krishna consciousness. And Krishna is far away because we're maintaining our false ego and therefore absorbed in our material conceptions of life, our material experience. And we're looking around thinking, oh, today is a good day. Why is it a good day? Not because I'm thinking about Krishna or I'm doing my sadhana very nicely. It's a good day because there's no smoke in the air. And therefore I can actually enjoy the sunlight. Although I'm completely in Maya, I'm completely absorbed in bathing my body and enjoying the rays of the sun, and Krishna is far, far away. He's even further away than the sun. Now, of course, it is not where I'm against the sun or against the sun rays. These are necessary for a healthy body. But better the sun is far away and Krishna is right next to us than Krishna is far away and the sun is right with us. So that's the choice we have to make. When and where and how we want to bring Krishna, we want to associate with Krishna, to what extent and how often. That's our choice we have to make. No one is stopping us from thinking about Krishna. Of course, under certain circumstances, thinking about Krishna becomes easier. And that's why we try to create that. Just like, for instance, here in the temple room, we have pictures of Krishna in his different forms. Now, we pinned up pictures from a magazine like Playboy, then it would be a little more difficult to think about Krishna if we came to the temple room. So we try to create the atmosphere in the temple room in order to make it as easy as possible to think about Krishna, to remember Krishna. Now, if we see the pictures, we see the deities, and we don't remember Krishna, oh, that's not so good. Or if we don't really care whether we remember Krishna, whether we see Krishna, we're just happy that Krishna sees us, and therefore will give us benedictions, so we can have a happy material existence. Well, then we miss out on the whole point of having the deities, or having pictures, or having a temple room, or having a place where we chant Hare Krishna. The idea is to remember Krishna. That's called Krishna consciousness, and to do it in such a way as that there is a certain consciousness which bewilders us. It's called that we're the proprietors. Therefore, generally speaking, no one who comes into the temple room should think that this temple room belongs to me. That we should think it belongs to Krishna. Similarly, even when we enter into our house, we should not think that this is my house. If it's our house, then we're going to have to pay for, you know. Then whatever we do for our house is sense gratification. And if we think that this is Krishna's house, whatever we do for the house is devotional service. So it's not a big, the same house is there, but it's a different consciousness. Similarly, we don't, even the temple president can't come into the temple room and claim it's his temple. If he does, then he's in trouble. Even the mouse is probably doing better than he is. Because the mouse probably doesn't think it's his temple. It's just he has a little space in there. So no one should think that this is my temple, nor should we think it's our house. No one should think that this Australia belongs to me, or any part of it, or any part of the material world. So we should not identify ourselves as the proprietor. That's called false ego and mode of ignorance. But how much do we identify ourselves as the proprietor? How much in ignorance are we? How much do we think that this is my body? And, all right, Krishna says it's not my body. But what about the things that are related to the body? How much attached to them are we? If I lose a pen, I become disturbed. It's my pen. Where's my pen? You took my pen. You heard that story of King Riga, right? And you took my pen. Well, you're going to have to live as miserable as a worm in stool for 60,000 years because you took my pen. I curse you. I counter curse you. Well, I curse you. So, this false ego and the mode of ignorance usually creates fighting and trouble. Now, when one becomes a little elevated, all right, I renounce the material world. I renounce this false ego and the mode of ignorance. All right, Krishna can have it back. Especially at the end of life, when there's nothing left, then one becomes very renounced. But one still has the idea of enjoying the material world. That this energy, whatever I have, is meant for my enjoyment. Even when it's trying to enjoy the misery, when it's sitting in bed, about to die, and enjoying all the relatives coming and crying. Yes, finally they realize who I am, and how much they'll miss me. So even in hell there's a kind of enjoyment. Due to the identification of the false ego, and trying to enjoy the senses, even when we have nothing, we still do it, enjoy our minds. And mode of goodness, the false ego is, yes, I'm not the enjoyer, There's nothing to hanker for. I'm not the controller. There's nothing to lament over. I'm the savior, that by my words people are elevated, and by my blessings they're elevated, and by my curses they're destroyed. The Vedic scriptures sing of my character. So this is false ego in the mode of goodness. But it's also false ego, because Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, Anadibham nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyayam sharira stopi kantiya nakaroti nanlipite. That those who can actually see with the eyes of real knowledge can see that the soul is eternal, transcendental, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. So that's ego, the mode of goodness, that actually I'm Krishna's servant, or actually in goodness when I'm the eternal soul, I'm not the doer of the activities, and in pure goodness, I'm Krishna's eternal servant, and I should choose the desires, I should desire to do something for Krishna. In other words, I should desire to become an instrument for Krishna. And how do we know if we're an instrument for Krishna? Because our mind, our activities are done according to the instructions of our authorities, coming from the acharyas. Instructions coming from Krishna and his representatives in time eternal. And my mind is thinking about Krishna, is desiring to please Krishna. So then I know my mind is in the right place. If it's thinking about Krishna, if it's desiring to please Krishna, and my intelligence is in the right place, when I can understand everyone and everything as they're related to Krishna. And that means my false ego is in the right place because I'm thinking myself to be the servant of Krishna. So if we think ourselves to be the servant of Krishna, then the result is that we'll see everyone, everything in relation to Krishna. And we'll feel Krishna's presence within our mind, we'll desire to please Krishna, and that way we'll be able to feel Krishna's presence. Because our feelings, our love will be centered on Krishna. And our activities will naturally be centered on Krishna. We'll be doing things that in eternity rather than for temporary results. So that's called Tadbuddhyas Tadatmanas Tadnishtas Tadparayanaha Kachatnapana Avritin Gyanan Yaduta Kalmashaha. When one's senses, one's mind, one's refuge and intelligence and faith are all focused on the Supreme, then one becomes cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge. And let's proceed straight on the path of liberation. So if we're feeling Krishna, we're thinking about Krishna, then we're, well, the bliss, knowledge, and eternity. We can start with eternity, do eternal activities. Sadhana Bhakti are eternal activities, the eternal activities of devotion. But we should also feel Krishna. We should also experience Krishna within the mind. But that's only possible when we see everyone and everything in relation to Krishna. When we start thinking, this is mine or this could be mine, then our intelligence is taken away by Maya. And when our intelligence is taken away, then our mind goes into material life and material experience. And our mind becomes fixed, identified with the false ego. So when we see things properly, then we can utilize our assets to please Krishna, according to Krishna's instructions and his representatives' instructions. And the result is that our mind and our activities are centered on Krishna, and then we can see everything clearer in relation to Krishna as our mind and intelligence, as our mind and senses and intelligence become purified. Then we become more and more convinced that everything actually is Krishna's property. Everything is actually meant for Krishna's pleasure. And I'm actually, and everyone else is, Krishna's eternal servant, and I should only do those things, I should only think of those things, I should only see things in relation to Krishna. Then one proceeds straight on the path of liberation, and that's called meditation. To see this world in relation to Krishna, to act in this world in relation to Krishna, to feel in this world in relation to Krishna, and then one will become qualified to see Krishna's activities in the spiritual world, experience them through hearing the Krishna book, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, or Bhagavad Gita. One will be qualified to see what Krishna is talking about, what his devotees are talking about in these books, and experience what Krishna is talking about in these books. But if we can't see Krishna here, we can't act for Krishna here, but we can't feel for Krishna here, then how can we experience and act for Krishna and understand Krishna in the spiritual world? That will not be possible. So those who are engaged in sense revocation throughout their lives, their meditation will be simply meditation on some other aspect of the material energy. And those who actually work seriously to serve Krishna and his mission in this lifetime can learn the process of seeing, thinking, and acting for Krishna, and therefore actually become Krishna conscious in this lifetime. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes?
What would the mind, or what are the mind think of the fuel of complacency?
Complacency?
Complacency is probably the biggest danger.
What's the name for complacency?
I'm saying that the question is, what are the things that fuel complacency? Because complacency in spiritual life is probably our biggest, one of our biggest failings.
Yeah.
But you know, understanding the urgency to apply ourselves in, I've got so much time, I've been talking here about 100 years.
Well, in the Spanish it says, does anyone know Spanish here? No. Anyhow. Barriga llena, corazón contento. When the stomach is full and the heart is satisfied. In other words, that's the biggest, usually the biggest obstacle for remaining enthusiastic. Atyahara, eating too much. When we eat too much and we get our mind becomes satisfied, our stomach is satisfied, we become a little drowsy and we start dreaming of material things. We're satisfied. So atyahara, eating too much or collecting too much. Generally we're always anxious that I don't have enough of something. And when we get it, then we feel satisfied. And then the result is atyahara, priyasa. And then we become distracted. We start having either to protect our assets or we get used to our assets. And then we spend our existence trying to collect more of them. And then pradalpa. You know, what's the price of this? You know, how much better is an iPhone 11 than one that was 10? So these are all distractions from devotional service. And it creates complacency. Because we think we substitute hankering for Krishna for hankering for material things. We substitute lamenting over the fact that we don't have Krishna over lamenting the fact that we don't have material things. But generally speaking, daily, when our stomach is full, we feel our life is successful. Isn't that right? Yeah. Maybe the problem of our existence is solved. Anything else? Yes.
I said you were saying that.
Thank you. Thanks. Maharaj, you know, you were saying that you need to see the relationship of other living entities towards Krishna. So, okay. But how one can experience one relationship with Krishna? How can one experience Krishna? And how can one understand that one is related to Krishna in performing devotional service?
By following, by satisfying Krishna's devotees. There's no such thing as a direct relation with Krishna. the relation to Krishna is through service, and service means like serving Krishna's representatives. So you serve Krishna's representatives, Guru, Sadhana, Shastra, and that's, if they're transparent, if my service is transparent, then I have a relation with, we can experience a relation with Krishna. Just like we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not a direct experience, because it shouldn't, if we actually understand who's speaking and who wrote this Bhagavatam, and who's then we're actually hearing the Bhagavatam through so many great devotees, through so many devotees. And therefore, it's direct, it's transparent, if they're transparent, it's direct, but it's through them. So the more we serve, we become a servant of the servant of the servants of Krishna, then the more we experience Krishna. Gopi Bhakti Pada Kamalayor, Dasa Dasa Anadasa. And if we think that we don't need the service of Krishna, then Krishna goes far away. When he claims to be my devotee, he's actually not my devotee. When he claims to be my devotee, he's actually my devotee. There. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, you said we should see our house as Krishna's house, but on a practical level, how do we see it on a daily basis?
Do you have deities?
Sorry?
Do you have deities?
Yes, not deities, just the pictures of our altar at home.
Any else? Do you think the deity, the picture is not different from Krishna?
Yes, they
are not different from Krishna. Yes, amen. So you take care of the picture very nicely. Whatever you're doing, you're doing this. I'm doing it to please these devoted to these the lordships in their picture, under the direction of these representatives. Then we'll remember we're actually not this body. That this body belongs to Krishna. Not only my house belongs to Krishna, but I'm in a house of Krishna's called this material body. I'm simply a rent in the house. Krishna is actually my heart as a super soul. He's the real proprietor. And when I use this body in his service, then I'll remember also that this house also belongs to him. But in order to do that, then we have deities in the house, even the picture is a deity. And we serve the deity. We sit down morning and evening, and we chant Hare Krishna, and we read Srimad Bhagavatam. Just remember that Krishna is the proprietor, Krishna is the enjoyer, and Krishna is the real friend of everyone. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.